Welcome to a special episode of Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. Today I'm joined by a very special guest who has never been on the show before, and that is April Spears. Hi, April.
Hi.
So today we're going to talk about a couple of things to do with, basically to do with teaching computer programming in school, and we're going to take a look at some of the things that are involved, some things we've done together over the past year. For those of you who don't know, April is actually in my class at school. Or more accurately, I'm her class teacher. We're not in the class together. But we have been working on a new computer programming course that we've been teaching for the first time this year to her class. April, what class are you in?
Primary 7.
So you are how old?
11.
11, right. So this is a class for 11-year-olds. And we've been building it on the iPad, and we're going to talk a little bit about it. But April, before we get into that, I'd like you to tell me what your thoughts on programming were before we started programming.
Well, at first I was very excited and I was like, oh, I'm going to make an app and I'm going to be famous. I'm going to make Crossy Road and Minecraft. And then I got worried because I knew how hard it was going to be and that I was never going to make Crossy Road, let alone Minecraft.
Well, you've identified my kind of basic problem with teaching programming, which is that everybody thinks they're going to write Minecraft as soon as they come into the class. But I think it's good to recognise that there is complexity in there, but it's not... I think to say that you're never going to make Crossy Road, well, somebody made Crossy Road, right? Yeah. So it's got to be possible somehow. So a little bit of nerves, but also enthusiasm?
Yeah, I was terrified at first, and then I was like, oh, this is going to be fine.
Without naming any names, how did other people in your class react to the idea that we're going to do a programming course at that stage?
There was, oh my goodness, this is going to be so cool. And then there was, oh my goodness, what have you done? We're going to have to make an app and it's going to be really hard.
Okay, so the mixture of excitement and fear at the same time. Well, I suppose that's the measure of challenge, isn't it? To feel the fear and do it anyway, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so why don't you tell the listeners some of the things some of the tools that we used for the programming course?
Well, we started off using the very simple app called BeBots, which is a kind of... an app that we give to primary ones and twos, really. Mm-hmm. And it's where you program a little bee to go around a course, basically. But we had to write down our method to do it, and we weren't allowed to stop and start again, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, so the app lets you kind of... it lets you crash into the wall and then program the remainder of the course again. Yeah. But the thing that we made the kids do in that class was to actually design the whole route before you programmed it in. Mm-hmm. How easy did you find that?
Like, looking back on it now, it seemed really easy and I would have been able to do it really quickly. Mm-hmm. But when we were doing it, it seemed like it was going to be impossible and that I wasn't sure we were going to do anything else.
Well, and really all you're doing there is you're programming forward, left, right.
Yeah.
Forward, left, right, forward, left, right. Yeah. What's interesting, I think, about the BeBots app is that the complexity gets hard quite quickly, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So the first... 3 or 4 levels are really, really easy. Yeah. And we had kids in the class who were saying things like, well, I can just do this all in my head. And I was sort of insisting, no, you've got to write it down because I know what's coming and you don't kind of thing. But as you noticed, by about level 10 or 11, it started to get pretty difficult, didn't it?
And then there was one where you had to put sheep into a pen, which was, sounds really easy, but it was really hard.
Sheep into a pen, can you explain that?
Well, you were like the sheepdog, but you were a bee. And you had to, like, follow the sheep around to get them into a pen. But the sheep kept moving all over the place and then ended up glitching and freezing.
So you had a bit of experience of what it's like to program the Roombas.
Yeah.
Okay. So that was the BeBots app. And you're right, that's an example of an app that we use for primary one for a certain purpose, which is just kind of basic logical thinking or sequence thinking. And then using the same app but using it at a higher level for older kids to make them do another thing again. Other apps? What did we go on to next?
Well, the biggest one that we used was Hopscotch, mm-hmm. which is a kind of computer programming game where you can program things, but then you can publish it, and then other people on Hopscotch can play your games, change your games, and republish them. Mm-hmm. And so we started off like just drawing the basic shapes on that, because mm-hmm. It has very simple commands like move forward, turn how many degrees. Repeat forever, mm-hmm. check once, if, and stuff.
So what we were doing there is we were basically learning how to draw things like a square and a circle and a triangle, mm-hmm. and basically taking what you know about geometry and maths and turning it into computer programs to start with. Yeah? How did you feel about that? Did you find that a step up?
Well, the squares were very simple because, mm-hmm. you know, move forward 100, turn 90 degrees and move.
They're very regular.
Yeah. When it got into circle, I was so confused, and I can't even think why I was so confused now, mm-hmm. because it seems so simple. Mm-hmm. But when you first start off doing even the basic shapes, it is really difficult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I suppose that's the nature of learning, isn't it? That you find things difficult to start with, and then you get them. You get better at them over time. What happened after the basic shapes?
Then we did more complex shapes, and that was like, well, for me the triangle felt quite complex, mm-hmm. but then it was making two triangles into a star kind of shape, mm-hmm. By flipping one of them upside down. That was really hard, mm-hmm. because we had to use the same package, because you can make packages.
Can you explain a package in hopscotch?
Yeah. You create a package that has nothing in it, and then you edit it, and you can put in like a whole draw square code so that you can use that again if you're going to like repeat draw square a gazillion times or something like that.
Okay.
So you can do that. But when we had to use the same package for drawing an upside down triangle as we're using for drawing a regular triangle, it was very difficult because there was the like move forward and then you've got to turn this amount of degrees, which is very difficult because I'm not very good at maths.
I'm not sure about that, but
well, I get very confused.
It's a certain kind of maths, isn't it? It's all the geometry and angles and so on. Mm-hmm. And I think what I was trying to get to with that particular exercise, where you had to basically draw like a Star of David made out of two triangles, one the right way up and with the point up and one with the point down, was to show that you can use the exact same code. But if you change the conditions in which that code runs, you can get a different result. Uh-huh. So the idea, for those of you who are not familiar with hopscotch, is that you have a character that is pointing in a certain direction and can be commanded to move and turn, along with other things. But those are the kind of basics that we started with. And what we would do there is you would draw a triangle, and then you would position your character in such a way that if you run the same code again, you get an upside down triangle. So you basically flip the character 180 degrees and then put it in a different place. And some of that was eyeballing and some of it was precise. Yeah. And that was kind of the interesting part of that exercise. So how far did we go down the complex shapes route?
We did a very funny looking square thing.
Be more specific. Remember, this is radio.
It was squares, but every time, like, it was 10 squares repeated, but every time you rotated it 10 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
Even now, I don't know how we got it right, because it was really big and confusing.
Mm-hmm.
But we thought that we were going to get it really easily, but when we tried it, it didn't go very well. And we just ended up getting like a big line of squares across the screen, mm-hmm. whereas what we wanted is them kind of curved in a kind of circle-ish.
So if you can imagine in your mind, listeners, the idea of 10 squares, all of which are centred on the same point, but they're rotated, each of them is rotated 10 degrees, so you have a kind of sunburst shape, if you like.
Yeah.
But the point of that was that the inside of that sunburst, if you have enough squares in it, turns into a circle. And that related to something that we learned in a previous topic, which was all about quick test right on the air. Do you remember in Pixar in a Box?
Oh, yeah. I thought you were going to make me say something about presentation skills.
No. That's this was just an example of how... And we recently did a topic on Pixar in a Box, which is one of the Khan Academy courses about computer graphics. And in that, they were using the midpoint formula to create parabolic curves. And that was just an example of how you can use multiple straight lines, essentially, to eventually make a curve. And if you just position the straight lines in such a way, you get the curve that we're talking about, yeah?
Yeah.
That's what you call making connections through your learning, just so you know. I like to point that out occasionally, just because it's not always obvious. Let me take a minute to tell you about our first sponsor for this show, and that's Jam Software. Jam Software provide ICT staff with enterprise tools that power widespread use of Apple technologies such as Macs, iPads, iPhone and Apple TV in education. And now with Casper Focus, they've placed these great technologies directly into the hands of teachers who work with students every day. Casper Focus allows teachers to quickly gain students' attention, conduct secure exams within an app, select a specific Apple TV assigned to their class, choose and distribute iBooks, and even initiate AirPlay right from Casper Focus. Learn what else you can do with Casper Focus at jamsoftware.com. That's jamfsoftware.com. So anyway, yeah, complex shapes. What else do we do with complex shapes?
Well, we used very simple shapes to make like a big... Well, we used squares, black and white squares, to make a big chessboard, which you thought was going to be hard. But I think I found that
quite simple. Yeah, I was quite pleased at how easily the class solved that one. Mm-hmm. It had a few kind of unusual solutions to that problem, but most people got it pretty straightforwardly. The idea was just to use the square package, but to use it multiple times, but then turn that package into a bigger package. Because if you think about a chessboard, what you had is a black square, then a white square, then a black square, then a white square. And then the next row was then white, then black. So you had a package that would draw one row, and the package that would draw two rows, and then you'd reuse... Yeah, so you had two different kinds of row, black first and white first. But then you also had people who just did one package, which was started with black, white, black, white. But then they would reverse it, and they would draw the first row from left to right, and then the second row from right to left.
That was quite interesting.
That was quite a clever solution because it only required one package, whereas the solution that you and I both did was to have two separate packages, one for a black first row and a white first row, and draw them all from left to right. So that was the thing that I got out of that course, was how differently people thought about the same problem.
Yeah, there was quite a few strange solutions to the problem.
And I basically saw sort of three categories of correct solutions that were all kind of strangely different. And then there were the people who didn't actually get a correct solution at all. So there was those four groups across the class.
And then after that, we had to make it, independent of size, was it?
Yeah, so that you're right, that was the next... Can you explain what we were trying to do there?
Yeah, basically we were trying to make values so that... If we just changed one number, the rest of the program would work, making the squares bigger, smaller, or like changing how thick the lines they were drawn with were, which was very confusing and very difficult and took me a very long time to do.
That was a hard one. Basically, we were trying to make it so that you could specify how large a square was on the chessboard. And this is exactly what computer programmers face with things like when you're dealing with iPads that have got retina screens and iPads that don't have retina screens, keeping the thing sort of looking the same proportionally, but bigger and smaller and so on. And that was your introduction to values in Hopscotch.
Yes.
What are values?
Values are when you can, set... Oh, it's very confusing. You set a certain number to a certain thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, move forward the size of this. So you make a size value for that, which is a number. Oh, my goodness. I can't explain this.
Explaining in words is a tricky skill, isn't it?
It is very difficult.
Values are what we call variables in programming. They're called values in Hopscotch, but they're basically storage for numbers or text, I suppose, that you can change and reuse later on. So you can put something into that value and then you can read it back. So the idea with that exercise was that you would put a number into a value, which would determine how big the square was on the chessboard. And then after that, you could change that value and you don't have to change anything else in your code. And that was kind of your first introduction to using variables instead of just hard coding every number and every distance that you wanted. You could then start to make it so that the code was basically as it was and you didn't have to touch it. Yeah. And you only had to change these controls on the outside.
It eventually made things a lot simpler, but when we were first learning it, it was difficult, as with everything else.
We got into some sophisticated uses of that later on, which we'll talk about just at the end. This episode is sponsored by XMA, a leading Apple solution expert for education. As an Apple solution expert, XMA are perfectly positioned to support your institution with the deployment of iPads and Macs. XMA have built upon their 30 years of experience to create the unique All Learn program. All Learn with Apple supports you with planning, financing, and managing your iPad and Mac deployment. XMA can also use their accredited trainers to deliver Apple professional development workshops to teachers and staff to ensure you get the best results from your Apple products. Visit xma.co.uk/out-of-school or follow them at WeAreXMA on Twitter to discover more about All Learn with Apple. And thanks to XMA for sponsoring this show. So the complex shapes thing, you know, we did some other things with complex shapes. We had different patterns and things. We tried to draw the Olympic rings.
Oh, yeah.
Why do we do that?
To get better at computer programming.
Oh, that's an easy answer, isn't it? That was all about trying to take problems that seemed large and difficult to solve and break them down into smaller parts.
Yeah.
And then solve each one of them. Now, what was the way that a lot of people wanted to solve those problems, do you remember?
Cheating.
Be more specific about cheating. What did we declare was cheating when it may not
Well, people would just draw like big circles and then put a white circle in the middle so that it would look like a ring.
Mm-hmm.
So they put the thickness to draw a line to like Mahusev and then put a slightly smaller white circle in the middle so it looked like a ring.
Okay. But then if you'd drawn something in behind it, that's not going to work, is it? So the other thing that people like to do a lot was, in hopscotch, you can have multiple actors on the stage at once.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of people wanted to do, like, you know, they wanted to figure out how to solve a circle, draw a circle, but then put five different characters on, each of which would draw one circle.
Yeah.
And that basically allowed you to position each one so that you didn't have to calculate any movement.
Yeah.
But somebody came a cropper with that when it came to the chessboard problem, because what this person did was they had 20 different characters all positioned just so that they drew one square and then they moved once and drew another square and moved once and drew another square, and that was the whole chessboard drawn. That was a very fast solution because it didn't require... It basically chomped the problem very quickly, but it didn't... It completely broke down when I asked them to change the size of the squares. Because the success of his entire solution depended on the fact that all those pieces were positioned in the same place at the same time, which wasn't always correct.
Mm-hmm.
That the person who did that basically never completed the size independent problem, did they?
Yeah.
Because their problem was
confusing.
it was completely mired in what we call technical debt in computer programming, which is that I made this decision at one time. And it's so difficult and complex to change that I can't actually ever get past it and get to the next kind of, or make the enhancement that we need to get. I suppose that was an important lesson in itself. Yeah, let others be a warning to you.
Yeah.
Okay, so what kind of larger programs did we get into by the end?
We did a couple of Wii games. We did one where you had like a shoe emoji and a football emoji,
mm-hmm.
and the football went from the top to the bottom of the screen and then got smaller every time it hit the bottom and got faster every time it hit the bottom, and you had to press the shoe and try to get the shoe to kick it and then your score would go up. That was quite confusing because you could move the height of the shoe but mm-hmm. not the Y coordinates of the shoe, which got very confusing because you were tapping in different places of the screen,
mm-hmm.
but it was moving to where your finger was instead of just to the Y coordinates of where your finger was.
Yeah. So that was your first introduction into trying to take control inputs from the user and do something with them that weren't just move this thing to exactly that position.
Yeah.
So we had taking the last position of the last touch and just extracting the X and Y values from it and using them separately rather than all together.
Yeah, that was very difficult. Although now it seems very simple, because that's the same with everything else in this course. Was looking back, it seems so easy, and I don't know how I didn't guess it the first time around.
I'm pleased to hear you say that, because that's kind of what I'm going for in the whole thing, isn't it? Yeah. What other kind of games did we make?
There was a kind of ping pong style game where you had two panels, and you had to basically hit the ball without touching the end of the screen, and it had to speed up like every 5-10 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even remember the code for that one because I found that really difficult.
It was basically, if you imagine the Pong game from the Atari 2600 back in the day, that was the first computer game that people played at home and everybody was blown away by that.
Oh, the one you had to wait for 45 minutes to open.
So, yeah, that was a tricky one because it involved quite a lot of different steps. It involved controlling the behaviour of the ball. It involved controlling the movement of the paddles based on your input. And the trick with that game was that if you tapped on the right-hand side of the iPad, you controlled the right panel. Mm-hmm. And if you tapped on the left-hand side of the panel, controlled the left panel. So that was somewhere where you had to use touch inputs from the user, but then test the input to see if it was on one side or the other. and then either ignore it or do something with it, depending on whether you were coding for the left paddle or the right paddle. So that was kind of your first introduction to if-else programming.
Yeah. That was very difficult, but it was very useful later on because we needed that for our harder assignments.
The kind of final project, wasn't it? What was the last one? Explain the last project.
An iPhone unlock screen. So if you imagine when you slide to unlock, you've got your password. We had to make that, and we had to set a password, and we had to check that if whatever the user put in was correct. So there was a lot of repeating the same thing, but you couldn't use repeat because it was always a little bit different.
That was because you were taking four digits, and you had to store, whether it was the first touch or the second or the third or the fourth, you had to store them in different values so you could compare it pairwise. We talked about some simple solutions at the start. Can you remember what the simple but wrong way of doing that was?
No.
The simple but wrong way was to take all the digits and add them up and see if the total matched the total of your existing password. But that doesn't work because if you get the numbers out of order, that still would still unlock your phone.
Yeah.
So we had to have separate values. We ended up having like 8 or 10 different values, which was the most complex program we got to in that course, wasn't it?
It's all kind of like a blur now because it was like 2 weeks of like every Tuesday, Thursday and Friday. Mm-hmm. It would be, right, just put in more values, people, more values, and it got very confusing and complex. But in the end it did work, and we even got sound effects in for right or wrong, and whenever you tap the numbers, it would give you a sound just to let you know that you've tapped them, which was quite a sense of accomplishment, if that's...
No, but definitely, and I think I was certainly learning things about hopscotch as we went along as well, and I think what we found with hopscotch was that it was great for basic stuff.
Yeah, but when it got more complex, it would start to glitch a wee bit.
It glitched quite a lot. If you loaded it up, say, like with a large number of actors or a large number of movements, it started to struggle and get slow. But also, it lacked certain features that would have made, you know, the iPhone unlock screen isn't that complex a problem, except for the fact that you're programming in an environment that didn't have certain basic coding features that you might want.
Yeah.
So we had constant trickiness with, you know, trying to keep some piece of text on the screen that had a value in sync with the actual value.
Yeah.
And those are problems that are basically solved in serious computing environments. But we talked a little bit about, you remember we talked about model view controller?
Yeah.
As something that we might want in hopscotch because we essentially hopscotch doesn't have a controller aspect. All you've got are views and models, and you end up having to put the controller code into one or the other. And you actually can't even code the models properly in hopscotch. You can only code the views. So you end up doing sort of 1980s-style programming just to keep everything up in sync.
Yeah, this is why you see when, like, some people who are, like, good at computer programming have made really complex stuff on hopscotch, and you go to look at it, but it's really slow and it doesn't work, and whenever you tap on this, you tap the wrong thing and stuff. And that's because you don't have the right stuff that they need for all their complex ideas.
Yeah, there are some very, very complicated programs. You can actually download them from the Hopscotch Gallery, can't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I noticed some kids were investigating other people's code in that there, and I found that as well. I would look in the gallery, I was thinking, well, is there something here I could show the class, how it's programmed? Mm-hmm. And whenever I downloaded something and looked at how it was programmed, I was like, there's no way I can explain that.
Yeah.
I couldn't even understand it myself, you know.
Yeah.
It was so... difficult to decipher how that thing is structured. It was quite tricky. So, do you think we've outgrown hopscotch?
Yeah, I think we have.
Well, but time to move on to something else.
Yeah.
Okay, so how do you feel about programming now?
Well, it seems a lot simpler and I'm less scared of it. But it seems to have left me that every time I see something happen on a TV, I think, so how did you program that? Like, when you're on your iPad and you leave it and you haven't tapped it for a while, when your screen goes a wee bit dimmer, I always think, so how long have you got to wait until that happens, and how did he program that to make that happen?
Mm-hmm.
Which I guess is quite interesting.
Well, I think for me personally, I find that as an interesting way to look at the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know about you, but I certainly, when I come to something new now, I think, well, if I was writing that, I would put in this, 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 and this. Therefore, this must have something like that, yeah? And then go hunting for it.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean you always find it, but, you know, you sort of well, there can't be no way to delete something in this program. So where have they hidden the delete function, for example? Yeah. You know, sometimes you do find that there's no way to delete things in a program, but that's a whole different problem, isn't it? Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. So what's next for programming?
We're doing workflow. Is that what it's called?
Workflow. Yeah, we're going to try and go to workflow next year. After the summer holidays, I need some time to write the course. But we're looking at workflow because workflow is actually really structured quite a lot like hopscotch, in the sense that it's got those kind of blocks. It's drag and drop blocks programming, rather than just having to write, you know, start with a blank page and just write code in it, which you'll get to eventually. There is a course for that later on, but for now we're going to try and make the bridge between hopscotch programming and actual Python programming by using workflow in the middle there, to kind of do a bit more kind of real-world programming, mm-hmm. but still have the interface sort of as friendly as it was before, which is something that would
make it less intimidating.
Less intimidating, but still less powerful, I think. And this is the thing that you'll find as you go into Python programming, is that when you get to Python, you can have a block of code, you know, 5 lines long that does your whole program.
Wow.
If you can get the power together. Whereas I find always with hopscotch and with particularly, you know, putting it up on the screen for the class to look at, you spend all your time scrolling up and down because the blocks are so big and chunky. The density of the code is actually quite low. So how do you feel about programming now? Is it still just a thing for boys?
No, I really liked it. I thought it was good fun, and I'd definitely like to go on and do the harder stuff, the Python mm-hmm. and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that'd be awesome.
Well, keep coming back to school. When Okay, well, thanks very much, everybody, for listening. April, thank you for coming on the show. We finally got doing this. Yep. Okay, we'll talk to you all next time.